Welcome to Education Matters, presented by the Public School Forum of North Carolina. I'm your host, Marianne Wolf. Today, we're joined by members of the inaugural North Carolina Flight Crew. The Flight Crew is a program organized by the North Carolina Center for After School Programs, connecting girls from across North Carolina who share a passion for STEM. We're also joined today by EdTech consultant Adam Gary and DPI Chief Information Officer Dr. Vanessa Wren to discuss the future of AI in North Carolina. Finally, we'll have Wayne Capps, the program manager from the North Carolina Center for After School Programs, joining us as well. Welcome, everyone. We are so pleased today to be joined by Caitlin, Eliana, and Indu from our North Carolina Flight Crew, as well as Wayne Capps, the program manager from the North Carolina Center for After School Programs. Welcome to all of you. Wayne, could you just spend 1 minute telling us a little bit about the North Carolina Flight Crew?
Yeah, I would be happy to. The North Carolina Flight Crew is kind of the brainchild of the folks at the North Carolina Center for After School Programs and our partners in the regional STEM ecosystems in North Carolina. We were really looking for a way to help young students in North Carolina, specifically young girls in North Carolina, find a way to explore STEM careers and to develop as a STEM ambassador for the community. We thought there was a big need there, and we found that need to be true, to be accurate to what we're seeing in the state. We had over 120 applicants for this program. And unfortunately, we could only pick about 10 girls. But the 10 we picked have been really excellent. And throughout the year, they've been focusing on developing their skills as communicators and as STEM leaders, and also writing their own STEM activities and planning their own STEM events in their local community. So the idea is they're going to take these skills that they develop through the program and give back to their local communities across North Carolina.
Tell us just a little bit about what the students in the program get to do.
Yeah, so what's cool about the Flight Crew program is that it is a pretty small cohort, but we go really in depth with girls to really focus on developing their skills as science communicators, as leaders in their community. And throughout the year, they have different focuses as the program progresses. They start by attending their first professional conference. They go to the Synergy Conference, where they got to present as a keynote speaker. We also have monthly virtual meetings where we work on their development throughout the program, and a big leadership summit in January. During the leadership summit, we focus on their communication skills and their hard skills in STEM activities and how one might present those, because in April, they have their own community science nights. These are coordinated in conjunction with local schools, typically the school that the flight crew member attends, and the flight crew member develops their own unique STEM activity for that community science night, which they deliver on the night of. And there are a bunch of other activities that are delivered in a science kit to that school, kind of a science night in a box for about 200 local elementary schoolers to come and participate in. One thing I'd like families to know about the North Carolina Flight Crew is that they are hosting community STEM nights in 9 different schools across the state in April this year. So take a look at the North Carolina Science Festival's calendar of STEM events. That's at nccienceFestival.org. And you might see a community STEM night led by these girls in your community that you're welcome to attend.
Wonderful. And I'd love to hear from each of the Flight Crew ambassadors that we have here with us today. So can you first tell me what grade you're in and what part of the state, and then why you think it's important for girls who are interested in STEM to explore that?
Hi, my name is Indu. I'm from Mooresville, North Carolina, and I am in 11th grade. I think it's really important for girls to be able to see role models that look like them, and that gives them the confidence to believe that they can pursue those same fields and be involved in STEM as they explore careers.
My name is Caitlin. I am from Mooresville, North Carolina, and I'm in the 6th grade. And I think it's good for girls to like attend this activity because it's a great learning opportunity and great to explore new STEM careers.
I'm Eliana. I'm in 7th grade. I'm in the western part of North Carolina. I think it's really important for girls to be in STEM or to like pursue STEM careers because there aren't really as many women in STEM fields right now. And it's just like a really fun thing to do. Like there are a lot of really interesting careers in the realm of STEM, so.
Why were you so interested in doing this, Eliana?
I was really excited. I thought it'd just be like a really fun like opportunity and a fun experience to have. And it has been. It's a lot of fun. And I also really like STEAM. So STEAM stands for science, technology, engineering, sometimes art and math. And that's another reason why I thought it would be a lot of fun.
Indu, why did you want to join the North Carolina flight crew?
I really wanted to join the flight crew to meet people with similar interests as me because I really see there's a lack of girls in pretty much any STEM field. And the flight crew has allowed me to meet people that have my interests, and I'm able to give back to my community through it as well.
Wonderful. Caitlin, what about you?
I wanted to join the flight crew because it helps me become a better leader. And I thought it was an awesome opportunity because I do want my future to have a STEM career. So I thought it would be fun.
Awesome. Now, Caitlin, what kind of things have you done in the program so far?
We have done many STEM activities and a presentation in front of teachers and STEM people.
Indu, what have been some of your favorite parts of the program so far?
I would say one of my favorite things was going to the Synergy conference back in November. I got to meet so many educators around our state and attend workshops about STEM education. And it was really nice being able to go up during the keynote speaker presentation and ask some trivia questions. So that was really exciting.
I love it. Eliana, what have been your favorite parts so far?
We went to a team building summit in, I think it was Raleigh, and I really liked that. That was a lot of fun. We did a lot of like communication and STEAM work.
That's awesome. And I'm just amazed at you all at your ages, how you're doing all this. So thank you so much for sharing. And one of the things I understand you're doing is helping to lead community science nights. So I wonder, Indu, if you can tell us a little bit about that.
So we all chose an activity for some student to host at community science nights in our areas. So we designed a little project and we're going to get the materials and lead some kids through understanding the science, technology, engineering, and math behind those projects and just getting excited about STEM.
That sounds awesome. So one of the things I think we really want to help share is how an experience like this as a flight crew member might help you in your future career. So Indu, I'm going to start with you. What do you hope to get out of this experience and how do you think it might help you in the future?
I've gained so many new skills and got to meet so many new people. So that's something that will definitely help me throughout my career. We've done different leadership building activities and learn more about STEM. In the summer, we're going to be shadowing some STEM professionals in careers that we're interested in. So I'm also really looking forward to that.
Wonderful. Caitlin, what do you hope to get out of this for your career?
I've already learned a lot about STEM already, and I'm hoping it could help with my future career as a patent lawyer or a zoologist.
Wonderful. You all have great plans. I can't wait to hear. Eliana, how about you? What are you hoping to get out of this experience?
I am not quite sure what I want to do as a career yet, so I'm hoping I can like kind of think about what I want to do, because I think careers in STEAM or STEM sound like they'd be really interesting. And so, especially with the job shadowing coming up, I think I'll be able to kind of see what I want to do.
And you definitely have a little while, but I think you're going to know about your options so much more than I did. So that's awesome. And Indu, I just before you have to go, I would like to ask you, what advice do you have if there's a 12-year-old girl out there who is curious about STEM but doesn't really know how to get involved in it? What would you say?
I would say just go for it and make a difference. And even if you're the first one to do it, that's awesome.
Caitlin and Eliana, do you have any advice if there is a student out there who's really interested in STEM or just curious? What do you think they should do? Eliana?
Another thing is like if you don't really know how to, if you want to like explore things, but you don't really know what to do yet, you can like look at programs that, and you can also like things at your school. You can, there are a lot of STEAM things all around us, and you can like a lot of hobbies. You can like pick up a hobby because there are a ton of those that go into STEAM too. And just like don't be afraid because STEM is great.
After the break, we'll be joined by Adam Gary, who is the president of Strategic EDU Consulting, and Dr. Vanessa Wren, the chief information officer at North Carolina Department of Public Instruction.
Education Matters is brought to you each week in part by Participate Learning, uniting our world through global learning.
We are so pleased to be joined by Adam Gary, President of Strategic EDU Consulting, and Dr. Vanessa Wren, Chief Information Officer at the North Carolina Department of Public Instruction. Welcome to both of you. Adam, you have helped me understand a lot of this, so I'm hoping you can help all of our viewers and listeners understand a little bit more about what AI is and some of the AI tools that are currently impacting education or might in the near future.
Yeah, no problem. So a big part of what I've been doing, as you know, is trying to help folks understand what are the risks and possibilities with generative AI. And to your point, a lot of that starts with this idea of how do we kind of remove the magic from the technology so people understand there is a technology behind this. It's not like a human brain, right? And yet it's the most powerful thing we've probably ever touched as, you know, normal citizens walking around day to day. So the big thing that I try to kind of really impress upon people is that they'll hear that this technology is just a giant prediction engine. And in some ways, that's absolutely right. However, the way that the training works and this idea of a neural network, it really is helping to understand, you know, semantics and syntax at the same time. That's why when you ask it a question, it's really good at responding, right? So for the you know, first thing that people really have to understand is like the technology is built on years and years and years of learning, failing, learning again. And at this point, the way the technology works, it can answer questions in ways that seem very humanistic, right? But that also brings us to the risks, which is like it doesn't always get the answer right. It does something called hallucinate, right, where it just makes stuff up. And the data in a lot of these models will stop at a certain time, right? And so, you know, it also will make stuff up if you ask it questions of things that happened after that data point. So it's just getting people to really understand, you know, those aspects of what's going on with the technology.
And how do you anticipate AI impacting education in the near future? Let's say 2 to 3 years, maybe?
You want positive or negative?
I'd take both. I think people want to know both sides of that.
Okay, sure. So just so I can end on the positive, I'll start with the negative. I mean, the number one thing that you'll see the impact will be is on misinformation, right? And if we don't spend the time on AI literacy with our learners and our educators, we're going to be in a place where you just can't decipher between what is truth and what is fact. And what I've been sharing with people is we're probably moving to a world that's verified before you trust, just because of how good these things are doing. I actually do in my workshops, I do this thing from the New York Times where they have these 10 images and you have to guess whether it's AI or real. And I would say the best group I've done this with got 5 out of 10, Right. So the AI literacy piece is, something that's going to be really, really important very fast. And then obviously, getting our hands around like academic integrity and really rethinking these models of what we call plagiarism and original work. Those things, if not tackled pretty quickly, are going to have a negative impact. Positively, my entire career, I've been focused on project-based learning. I wrote a book on personalized learning, but the technology to help scale this stuff just hasn't been there. If you think about it, a teacher's job, 90% of what they do is with kids. That ability for them to get a unit, get resources, ask something, and get like a research-based way of doing something in a format that's easy for them and scalable, we just have never been able to provide. And so on the positive side, from the learner perspective and from the teacher perspective, I think we'll be able to scale models that will truly, allow for personalization as long as we kind of define it with some voice and choice on that side. I think from an operations standpoint, you're going to see that like school districts, right now, we know that, they have a teacher shortage, right? We also know that mental health and wellness is something that we need to focus on. And so I think with the ability to remove some of those things and really augment the stuff that are not uniquely human and allow folks to focus on those uniquely human things, we'll bring some more joy back into the profession. But we'll also be able to scale those things that really don't need, you don't need a human to do, right? For example, HR stuff. Someone's going to get hired and they have to move through a process that's very well defined. And the AI can move it through that process for folks, right? And make sure that, everything gets into the hand of that potential new employee, but does in a way that the humans don't have to touch every part of it. And then the thing I'm probably most excited about is this idea of being able to use your own data as a school system, right? So these generative AI models will be able to take a look at our data, which we've been doing for years, right, to try to do predictive models. But once we get to that root cause, now we'll have the ability to basically ask the mind of every educator that ever lived, like, how do we solve for this? What are the solutions and resources to help us? And I'm super excited about that.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here, and we'll definitely have you back again.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Welcome, Vanessa.
Thank you, Marianne. I'm glad to be here.
So, could you tell us a little bit about how the North Carolina and the State Department of Public Instruction is approaching AI?
About a year ago, when generative AI made a lot of news stories, and you heard other states beginning to say, we're not going to use that in our state. We came out very early and said it aligns so closely with our digital learning plan. The work that we've done in North Carolina is so rich around digital learning, and that we were going to learn about the technology, see if it supports student outcomes, and embrace it from that angle, but also release guidance to put some guardrails around how it can be used well. Part of our approach around that is a two-prong approach. The first prong of that was to release the guidance. We wanted to create a playbook that was very practical, approachable, in that it was easy to replicate, that would help educators and schools and committees learn about generative AI, and also put some things in there around safety, security, responsibility, and be very living in its documents so it can move as generative AI evolves over time as well. We can continually update that guidance. And then our second prong has been certainly to train teachers and to train school administrators and how to understand AI and the role that it can play around designing teacher capacity with ongoing embedded coaching, training, and support from colleagues. We've actually started what we call our AI Ambassadors Program here from the Department of Public Instruction, where we're building subject matter experts out in the field who can be the go-tos for other educators as they learn how to use it appropriate for classroom usage and a deeper understanding of content.
Thank you so much. And I wonder for those watching or listening, if you can spend just a minute talking about some of the ways that AI can be used as a tool in the classroom for learning.
I think it's important to remember that we've actually had AI for a while. Teachers have used it as a predictive text when they're typing emails, analysis of student data and outcomes, research algorithms. So what we've actually focused on is an introduction to the generative AI. And I think the reason why that is so important is that technology specifically provides new ways for teachers and students in the classroom to increase their productivity. As we looked at introducing AI to the public, some of the ways that we've shown teachers that it can be used is brainstorming and refining lessons to designing lessons, generating quiz questions, sample documents, assisting in research tasks. One of the things that I have found the most fun to look at and see teachers use in a classroom is historical role play, where teachers can use generative AI with students in a manner where they can look at the perspective of an event or a theme from a historical figure and learn more information about that. Certainly, the opportunity is there for teachers to use it in a more personalized learning environment. And I think one of the things that makes it so easy is the generative AI has such a human voice to it. So it eases the amount of time a teacher needs to spend in adapting to classroom readiness. And so I think that's why it's been such a firestorm, how it's hit the education world, because it's very easy to use and teachers can quickly take it and adapt it.
And what is your advice for parents on getting to know this technology or how to guide their children? Because we're getting a lot of those questions too.
Talk with your children about AI. Let them know that it is a technology and help take the time to understand how the large language models work. Just as we have to do, we have to critically evaluate the accuracy. We need to ensure that there's safe usage. So our students need to learn and parents take the time to learn with them that they might get information back that's not correct. And that's a learning experience in itself to maybe try to make sure you get an answer back that's wrong so you can work with your child on how to validate and how to evaluate the data itself and how to create a prompt that might give you better answers. So my advice to parents is learn as much as you can about it. It takes the fear factor out the more you know, and also take the time to talk with your children about it, how to use it well, how to create work and make it your own work. And I think that's a wonderful role for parents to take with this technology.
Last question, Vanessa, as you look across the state and you all have provided the new toolkit and other guidance, do you feel like most districts are embracing at a similar pace, or are you seeing a wide variety across the state?
Well, I'm seeing a wide variety across the nation and the state. North Carolina was the fourth in the nation to release some guidance around the appropriate and safe use of generative AI. We have partnered with consortiums such as the International Society for Technology and Education, the Consortium for School Networking, and the Chief Council of States to share what we've learned and also to learn from others and also how we can impact future policies. There's been many states who've rushed to put policy out there, particularly around data privacy and data protection. We have also looked at that, but we wanted to start with guidance and teach folks how to use it safely first before we inform what policy looks like in our state. But we have partnered with others. We will continue to partner with others to share best practices and share how we can learn more about this technology and learn more how to prepare our students for the future.
Well, thank you, Vanessa. I always learn from you, so it's wonderful to be here with you today. And we'll make sure to share all of those links to the guidance and everything as well. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us as we talked about innovation in education and how important it is for us to prepare our students for the world in which they will live. That's all for today, and we'll see you next week.